I hiked it back in 2011 when I wasn't even a runner. And I was actually writing a guidebook for it. And I remember putting in the Mike Hartley record from 31 years ago. I remember putting that in, and I wasn't a runner, let alone an ultra runner. So I just thought that is superhuman, just from, you know, almost from another planet.
At Athletic Brewing Company, our innovative process allows us to brew great-tasting craft beer without the alcohol. From IPAs to stouts to golden ales and more, our beers are made with organic grains and start at only 50 calories. Now you can enjoy the refreshing taste of great beer anytime, anywhere. No matter your motivation, if you want to keep a clear head and drink healthier, Athletic beers are here for you. Place an order today at athleticbrewing.com and get free shipping on 2 6-packs or more.
Thank you for joining us again with the Fastest Known podcast, where we are physically distanced and socially connected. Sometimes I wish we were physically a little closer, like being able to do races and see each other in person. But for now, to be physically distanced is the way to go. And indeed, we're really physically distanced right now because I'm speaking across the pond with Damien Hall from England. Welcome, Damien.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, you're a big name in England. Of course, we have listeners around the world, a lot in the United States, I admit. But just so people are aware, I've mentioned to a few folks I'm going to be talking with Damien Hall, and they said, oh, Damien, you are? Yeah, he's really good.
Come on, I don't believe you.
Well, there's that classic British reticence. We inherited that. And something else we inherited, of course, is trail running, because the Brits invented it, I think. You know, fell running. You guys go way back. You guys go back centuries.
I must admit, in Britain, fell running is kind of a northern thing, and I'm from the south, and I must admit, it's not. You know, I've never really called myself a fell runner, and you know, the hills around here are just little hills, and we don't call them fells. It isn't really a word in our vocabulary down here. So it's funny when sort of people talk about our fell running. It doesn't feel personally a big part of my heritage, although in recent years I've got a lot more involved in it, I suppose. But it's a fascinating sport with a big history and still thriving today.
That's a great clarification. I did not know that, because I always appreciated the term fell running. Of course, on the continent, people say mountain running. The States sort of invented the term trail running, which they didn't really do. They ran up and down mountains. But that's right. You're in the South. Your hometown is called Box, B-O-X. Yeah. Not very sexy there, I have to. Pardon me.
Well, no offense taken. There's a village nearby also called The Shoe.
Oh, no.
True story. You can check that out on Google if you want.
Is it called The Shoe or just Shoe?
Yeah, The Shoe. And then we live in Box, you know, The Shoe, Box. And there's another one nearby. Obviously, I live near Bath, which some of your listeners might have heard of, which is a World Heritage listed city. But that name, you know, has some double meaning. And then also there's a little village nearby called Old Sodbury, which is another classic.
Oh, my gosh. Well, tradition. Let's just say, whether it's fell running or whatever, you have a strong tradition.
Well, it feels like in this area of the country, what we lack in fell running tradition, we make up in silly names for places tradition. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've acquitted yourself well for not being in rolling, but not being in a mountainous part of the country at all. But look at what you've done. I mean, you've done the UTMB Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc many times, including a fifth place finish 2 years ago. Fifth place is pretty good coming from essentially sea level.
Yeah, I mean, it was, thank you. UTMB was an obsession of mine for 3 or 4 years. When I first did it, I think I was 29th in the men's race. It was my first kind of international race, really, or first 100 anyway. And it was like, oh, wow, this is quite something else. So I was back the next year, you know, improved a bit, and then finally in 2018, got into the top 10, which had just eluded me the year before. I suppose, I do live in the flatter half of the country, but I, I frequently make trips over to kind of South Wales, which is about an hour and a half away from me. And I go to a place called the Brecon Beacons, which is a national park. Now, they really are like the biggest climb there is about 400 meters, I think. So not that's like the biggest climb in the whole of south of England and Wales. So that's the best I can kind of do. But that yeah, if I get there regularly, then I can get in reasonable shape. But yeah, UTMB has been pretty exciting to me down the years. Yeah.
And no UTMB this year.
No. And in a way that ties in with probably the main reason you're getting me on your excellent podcast, because that gave me, well, I've been thinking of this FKT on the Pennine Way for 4 years actually. But each year I was so intimidated by it that I would give myself, you know, any real excuse that I would put it off again. So I'd be, oh, well, I've got a race on. I'm doing UTMB. I can't fit it in. And then, of course, this year, all the races have vanished. So it was like, oh, I've run out of excuses. Maybe I have to do it.
Let's just clarify that. Just to clarify to the listeners, the Pennine Way is super classic, kind of a north-south route right up the kind of the spine of the central part of England. And it's a long one. It's 268 miles. So I can see why you would sort of want to put that one off.
It is. I mean, obviously, it's 2,000 miles shorter than your Appalachian Trail. But it is kind of our – do you say Appalachian or Appalachian or something else?
Appalachian.
Appalachian, which we follow the FKTs on that over here with great interest. And I recently read, Scott Jurek's excellent book, North. The Pennine Way is probably our closest equivalent. I mean, obviously, we've got the Bob Graham Round and those sorts of things. But the Pennine Way, I think, and the Pennine Way was inspired a bit by the Appalachian Trail. It's our oldest kind of national trail. And it's quite rugged, terrain. I mean, I know you would have had John Kelly on your show. He might maybe explained it, but it's quite mixed terrain and it's quite boggy. Above anything else, you'd say it's boggy, you know, sort of wet and muddy. so it's not really, it's rare. You know, there are one or two bits on it that you might think of as a mountain, but small, you know, small mountains. But it's quite, yeah, it's an exciting.
Let's clarify something. You said something right there, Damien, that really caught my ear. You equate it with the Appalachian Trail in terms of status. It was inspired a bit by, its creation was inspired by the Appalachian Trail. But is that true? Because I don't know at all. I'm literally asking. There's so many long routes in the UK. It's incredible. Like, for example, 4 years ago, you got the FKT in the Southwest Coast Pass. And that was, you know, 10 and a half days. But you think the Pennine Way is really top of the heap?
Yeah, I do. And people do ask me to sort of compare my experiences on the two, like which was tougher. And I suppose, if I'm honest, yeah, the Southwest Coast Path, which is, 630 miles, that was a tougher experience just because how many days it was. So it was pretty much 11 days with not much sleep. So it was a tougher experience. But the difference with the Pennine Way is it really has a lot of history. It ties in with something that happened here in the 1930s called the Mass Trespass. And obviously we have quite different land rules and regulations over here, but it used to be that the sort of rich elite owned just kind of all, I can't remember the exact percentage, but just, you know, 99% roughly of all the land and, you know, sort of common folk, for want of a better phrase, couldn't just go hiking up on the hills because all that land was private. So a load of people got together in an act of civil disobedience that's now called the Mass Trespass, up in the Peak District, a national park in the center of England. And that protest led to a change in the laws. So people, especially sort of hikers, could go hiking a lot more, in a lot more places. So it was important for that reason. And then also from those protests, the Pennine Way was born. I think it took another, I forget, 10 or 20 years, for it to actually come, might have even been 30 years, for it to come to fruition. But one guy who was there at the protests called Tom Stevenson was galvanized partly by the protests, but also he'd heard about the Appalachian Trail and he thought, why can't England have something like that? even though it's, you know, there's a lot less land in total to play with, but he wanted to create some sort of trail. So we still consider it, I think, the big one here in that its status and its history. But yes, it's not the longest, and we've got longer ones coming all the time now. We've got one all around the Welsh coast, and there's one being built all around the coast of England as well. So I guess there'll be more FKT opportunities coming up.
Wow. Well, thanks for that. That was an excellent explanation. The mass trespass, we badly need that here in the States. Right. Because as you probably know, the landowners are extraordinarily uptight. The whole concept of private property is just a little out of control. I mean, if you're talking about someone's suburban front yard, great. Yeah, stay off the lawn, kids. But if you're up there in the hills, you're out there in the woods, well, you need to connect a few things up. And so with the mass trespass, they changed the laws. So now it's possible, as long as you don't disturb anything or sleep overnight and so forth, you can cut through a cow pasture in order to get up on the hills.
I think, yeah, within reason, there are still some laws, but there are a lot more footpaths available, and a lot more of the sort of land is accessible. Not everything is, but in fact, it's even better in Scotland. They have slightly different laws. In Scotland, I'm pretty sure you've got the right to roam wherever you please, I believe. England is still a little bit more, a little bit more restricted. But since that mass trespass, it's improved a great deal.
Mass trespass. That's amazing. And that's how the Pennine Way got started. But going back to status, that's a great history. You have FKTs on the Paddy Buckley round. And Paddy is one of the big three. Of course, you just mentioned the Bob Graham. And that's going up further north, of course. This is basically summits. While the Pennine Way is it's a trail, or as you often call it, a way. But the rounds are just ticking off summits, linking summits. Very different. So how would you compare the rounds like Paddy Buckley and the Ramsey and the Bob Graham with the Pennine Way?
Yeah, they are quite a different thing. And I guess I would, with the rounds, that's classic fell running. That is, you know, up and down fells or sort of mountains, you know, quite small mountains compared to yours, but often quite rough terrain. There's often not an obvious trail, which makes it quite exciting, because it's kind of 1 minute it's rock, 1 minute it's sort of heather and long grass, and the terrain can be really, really rough and challenging. That surprised me, getting that record last summer. I wasn't really planning on it. It was actually after helping, I helped John Kelly a little bit last year on the Paddy Buckley round when he was doing his grand round idea, when he was trying to link all three rounds. And I also helped another friend, I don't know if she's familiar to you, but Nikki Spinks is an incredible athlete over here, and she was doing a double Paddy Buckley round. So she's the only person to ever do that. So basically go round and then go round again. So that's, you know, it was over 50 hours of pretty much nonstop. And I helped both of them, and I helped a friend as well, you know, sort of pace them on a bit of it. And then I suddenly thought, well, I know this round quite well now. And the record seemed, you know, maybe reachable. So I went up the last summer. I only told, I think, three people, including my wife, because I didn't want, there is this tradition here with the rounds that you can get, you know, a whole team of pacers to support you and help you. And I didn't really want all the fuss of that. So I just set off on my own and did four of the five legs on my own. It was going quite well. And then I did start to drop off the pace. I got a bit dehydrated and so on. And then I had one friend, had said he might come along for the last leg. And he did turn up, and thankfully he did, because he sort of kicked my butt a bit and politely bullied me over the last few mountains. And yeah, I got in just under the old record. I forget, I think 11 minutes under the old record or something. So it was quite an exciting finish. Wow. And I was really surprised. I hadn't really expected to be able to do that, I suppose, on, you know, on fell running terrain, you know, proper fell running. But that happened, and that was fun.
Well, getting an FKT is always fun. 17 hours, 31 minutes. You got it by 11 minutes. The FKT scene is hot in the UK. It's a little slow to start. Maybe it's because of the pandemic. But the past 2 months, boy, you guys are getting after it. We're getting a lot of submissions from the UK now.
Yeah. So I think lockdown was fairly I'm struggling to follow what's going on over there. Well, it's different depending on which state, isn't it? I think so. So over here, the lockdown was quite strict at first. In fact, you were only allowed, you allowed one bit of exercise a day, and you weren't meant to travel to exercise for quite a long time, maybe a couple of months. So a lot of us were, I guess, training at home, and all our races were getting cancelled. But then the lockdown started to ease a bit, and really, it's only been in the last, few weeks that you're allowed to stay somewhere else overnight. You see, that was the big. Me and John Kelly, John's a good friend, and we were debating quite a lot. You know, we exchanged kind of WhatsApp messages a lot about when could we go, when was it both kind of legal or ethical, which aren't always at the same time. When was it okay? And there was a spell. Actually, another runner started out on a big challenge, and the police stopped her because she wasn't allowed to stay out overnight. And she actually argued. She said, "Well, I'm not staying anywhere. I'm running through the night, and I'm not stopping out anywhere. You know, I'm not." And she genuinely believed she wasn't breaking the lockdown regulations. And the police were. I imagine they were reasonably good to her, but they did say, "Look, you have to stop. I'm sorry, we can't let this carry on." So we had to wait for that to be okay again, really. And then suddenly it was only a few weeks ago, and so lots of runners have been. A, busting to get going because we've been training, and then B, I guess we've had all these plans and we're just desperate to get out and break some records. So it's been an incredible few weeks, and I imagine it'll carry on for a few weeks more.
Probably so. Well, you did a good job over there. The United States infamously did a terrible job with COVID-19. Just a sort of a disgrace to speaking personally, editorially here. We never had a national policy. We still do not. And indeed, national politicians as well as local politicians are often seen flouting the rules or not making rules and not wearing masks themselves, so modeling poor behavior. So it was, wow, how not to deal with the pandemic. And one easy step would be looking at the United States. So good job that you have emerged out of that. I talked to someone from, or was it Germany, just recently, and they said, yeah, we don't even talk about this anymore. It's done. This isn't really what we think about. And so meanwhile, people are looking our direction going, wow, sorry about that. Yeah. How are you guys doing? You know, the United States, the world's most powerful country, is now being getting sympathy from other countries.
I mean, I must admit, we haven't in Europe. We have been one of the worst. You know, we're probably getting off on a bit of a tangent, but Britain hasn't been one of the best performers by any means. We've had a lot. Our statistics are very bad compared to Germany and some of the countries that acted more quickly, I suppose. But hopefully we're through the worst of it, but I'm not totally sure. But yeah, I hope you guys get it sorted soon, because it's yes.
School is supposed to start in 2 weeks, and most school districts have not announced the plans yet.
Right. Yeah.
Well, crazy, you guys busted out, like you said, and the Pennine Way with you and John, that was particularly interesting. John told me that you two had discussed going in opposite directions starting at the same time. That's a first, I think. In my knowledge, that would have been a first to go for an FKT, and one person was going to get it, another person would not, but doing it simultaneously, that would have been very cool.
It would have, actually, wouldn't it? I don't know if I regret not doing that, but it would have been exciting. But it would have added quite a lot of stress as well, in that you're not just thinking about yourself. You're thinking, how's the other guy doing? How's the other guy doing? But it would have been incredibly exciting. It was funny. We were both on a training run, actually, in the Brecon Beacons together and this is in sort of mid-March, when we realized, I think, how serious the lockdown might be. I think it was just the day after Trump had started to ban international flights. And I remember John being a little bit worried about, getting back to America and so on. But I think we both, he was already going to do the Pennine Way then, and I wasn't at the time because I was still going to do UTMB. But we had a conversation on the way back in the car, and I said, if UTMB doesn't go ahead, I hope you don't mind, I might try the Pennine Way too. I've been thinking about it for a while. And I must admit, I am coached by David Roach, and he can verify that when he took me on, I did say I was keen on the Pennine Way, and then he kind of talked me out of it. And I was happy to dodge it. But as I say, when the races started disappearing, I got quite keen on it again. And John said, John, very, you know, very kindly, I think the next day or two, sent me a message and said, hey, we could run it like together, like starting off together. And I think it was my idea to say, hey, we could even start at different ends, because I knew I wanted to go south and he seemed to want to go north. And then over time, if I'm totally honest, I did waver on that sometimes. And sometimes I thought that wasn't such a good idea for me. And sometimes I was back at, sometimes I was back into that idea. And then ultimately, we just couldn't get the same dates to work necessarily. I was very keen to get, you know, I knew having a good team around me and a couple of individuals in my road crew who I really wanted to get there. Like one of them couldn't do the week before. And I thought, actually, I want these two guys. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be the difference for me. Two good friends called Tim Laney and Mark Townsend, who are very experienced. And I thought, if they're on my side, you know, I'm going to be in a really good position. So I prioritized kind of that over the chance of a double. So sorry, everyone who has retrospectively got excited about that prospect.
Right. Well, that's a good story. So you are obviously a very good runner and you are a coach. And so you had this buttoned up. You wanted your crew and you wanted the best crew in order to have the best effort. And you got it. You beat John's time by approximately 3 hours.
Yeah, I still can't really believe that, because I mean, also John, you know, I consider him a good friend, but you know, he's kind of a hero to me as well, especially all his exploits at the Barclay Marathons, of course, which I'm sure you've gone over lots of times and are well known. But he's a lovely fellow as well, and a very dry sense of humor. And I think I'm confident the kind of fell and ultra running communities here have really taken him in, because partly because he has these huge ideas. And really goes for them, but also he's just, you know, a very sort of courteous and respectful person as well, and it's fascinating to hear all his take on. Did you talk to him about the difference between sort of American snacks versus British snacks, because he's very into his sugary snacks. I don't know if you got that.
So no, he didn't. Well, I'm going to just pause on that one. I want to hear about that. But he did comment on the welcoming in the community. He was very happy about the community that you have there. So as you just said, you two are friends. You're discussing this. And when someone goes, particularly, and does one of the big rounds up north, everybody comes out. The previous FKT holders come out for it. Maybe they're going to pace you. And so it's a real community event, and everybody supports everyone else. And he loved that. He felt very accepted over there. So I definitely want to mention that. But what about the snacks? I didn't hear about the snacks.
Well, he was very interested in I suppose our different chocolate bars and snack bars. But I didn't really realize quite how interested he was. He I hope he doesn't mind me saying this. He does have a spreadsheet in which he compares you know, the nearest equivalent. So he'll have an American name of a snack, and then he'll have the British name, you know, the nearest equivalent available over here. And he's got all sorts of strong opinions on, you know, the things that we do well and the things that America does better when it comes to snacks.
Oh my gosh. I did not know. And there's a spreadsheet. Yeah. This must be a private spreadsheet, I'm guessing.
I've seen he sent me a screenshot of it. So he wouldn't send me the full spreadsheet. I guess I would corrupt it or manipulate it in some way. But he sent me a screenshot of it. But in the past,
oh my gosh, so would this be like Cadbury versus Hershey, something like that?
That sort of thing, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
So I know he likes. I know there are two or three things he really likes over here that aren't available over there, like a Turkish Delight and a Tunnocks bar, and I think there's something else. But he definitely thinks there's a gap in the market. I think it's like sugary bun cake type stuff. I think you guys do much better or something. But so he's very into all that. And maybe you need to get him back on just for a sugary sugary snack special.
Or ask him to create the worldwide spreadsheet. That would be interesting. Yeah, because things, you know, UK, US, there's differences, certainly, but it's not massive in my personal experience. But you go elsewhere, it gets dramatically different. You go to Finland, and it's like blueberry soup and pickles. they really go somewhere else with it.
Oh,
and then, of course, there's the eternal debate. Is it Marmite or Vegemite?
Oh, yes. Yes, with the Australians. Yeah, and then it starts all over again. and Tim Tams, we have an equivalent to a Tim Tam, but their Tim Tams are very good. I don't know if you've tried those.
No.
But yeah, that's John. Yeah, I don't know if John's been to Australia yet. That's we need to hear more about that. Yeah. but yeah, he would enjoy. I remember being up in, when I was helping on the Paddy Buckley round, I handed him a bit of a chocolate bar we have here called a Bounty. And it was like, it was blowing it was really strong wind, horrendous rain. We're in the middle of the night up a miserable mountain, everyone's fed up. And I pass him a bit of chocolate and he's kind of there contemplating for a bit. And then I can't remember what he compared it to, but he had the presence of mind in the middle of this storm when we're up against the time. He wanted to be sure about what chocolate bar it was and how it compared to an American bar. It was quite, that became more important for a minute or two than the quest to get around the mountains.
Oh, he had to check out the variety of chocolate bar before he would eat it.
No, I think he did sample it first, but then he was like, then he wanted to know what it was called and was quite keen to, link it to an American equivalent and stuff. So yeah, he's very serious. Don't underestimate how serious he is about snacks.
Well, I rode my bike to Lhasa, Tibet, one time, which you're kind of getting out there. There's no snacks. There's no none of the above is there, but I hoarded a chocolate bar. Just hoarded it. It's like this little safety blanket. Security blanket of a chocolate bar. And when I was finally leaving, I was hitchhiking, I was in the back of a truck, and I finally said, okay, I'm out, time to do this. And I was with a bunch of other Tibetans on top, and I said, wow, these guys have taken care of me, they've been so good to me. And so I decided to split my chocolate bar with one of the Kampas, one of the people from Eastern Tibet, from Kham. And I handed it to him. He took a bite and spit it out.
Oh.
They couldn't stand it. They didn't like it.
Wow. Yeah.
So this would be a vast spreadsheet. So speaking of John, this is about you, Damien, but I have one question now that we're talking about John. Do you think he can succeed on the grand round?
Yes, I do. I think what was really important, he's had the kind of dress rehearsal last year, and I think he that really helped him to see which aspects of that were realistic and which bits needed to be changed. So, and he was really unlucky with the weather last year. It was pretty miserable. I think most British fell runners wouldn't have started it in that weather. I think maybe he felt, all these people he didn't know would come out to support him, and he couldn't sort of, I'm only guessing, but yeah, couldn't postpone it because all these people had supported him. I think in future he'd be more confident about postponing it, and people totally understand that, because it's almost rule number one is that, if it's going to be miserable weather, why not just put it off for a few days? So yeah, I have every confidence in him. He's an incredible, he can really dig deep when he needs to. So yeah, I'm excited to see him do it.
Okay. Well, thanks for the tip on that. Maybe he's got his chocolate bars dialed and that will be the ticket.
Yeah.
What's next for you, Damien? So again, you're an outstanding runner and your website mentions things I did not know, which you've been a freelance journalist for some time. You've written many articles, you do a little running coaching, and you're a sponsored runner with Innovate, which is of course founded in the UK, based in the UK still, that shoe company. So what's next? What's up? Where do you see yourself going?
Well, I'm struggling a bit with that. I've been asked that question a little bit over the last few days, and I don't really have. I'm still recovering, to be honest. It's how many days has it been? I don't know, less than 2 weeks since I finished on the Pennine Way, and I'm getting better each day. But yeah, I was pretty wrecked there for a few days. When I got home, my cat ran away from me, and so I was obviously not moving in a. Yeah, it treated me like, sort of like an alien. And then I sort
as long
of,
yeah, as your had... wife stuck with you, you're probably okay.
It's touch and go. And sort of had those horrible night sweats for quite a few days. I've been running again, just a little bit, just short and easy. But I don't have the hunger back yet. That kind of right, got to get to the mountains or got to do something exciting. So I've got, I don't know, three or four or five things that I'm sort of putting in the pot, maybe to do something smaller this year. But at the moment I don't feel that excited about anything. So I think it's better to just chill out a bit and enjoy a bit of red wine and enjoy a bit of cake and that kind of thing for now. Cause when I'm training hard for something like this FKT. Like, yeah, I didn't drink alcohol for sort of 4 months. Yeah, it's nice to just have a, not a blowout, but, you know, just relax for a few weeks and catch up with all the friends, I suppose, I've neglected, and so on. So, yeah, I don't really have something. I guess I'll decide. Yeah, and I guess we still don't know what races, even thinking about next year. We none of us can be totally sure which races will be on. So I'm hoping, you know, this has been like a golden summer of FKTs. I guess I hope it will sort of continue, really. I, at the moment, personal projects appeal, they seem more exciting to me than races. I don't, it'd be fascinating to know if lots of other runners feel the same way. But yeah, right. I'm in no rush to do something right now.
Good.
Anyway.
Good. Yeah. That's really good to hear. And pardon me for asking the question. It's sort of tradition on the Fastest Known podcast to ask what's next, but you just finished the Pennine Way and you don't want to be asked what's next. You want to rest a little bit. So that's a very appropriate answer.
It's totally fine. I mean, I honestly feel like that Pennine Way run was kind of 4 years for me. It was 4 years. Well, if you want the full history, actually, I mean, and as I got into ultra running, I guess just more and more things become possible for you, don't they? You know, that first 100-mile race, that first 100-mile, I guess, run in the mountains or whatever. And slowly it dawned on me, you know, maybe I could have a go one day. So there's a real nice kind of circle of, it's probably 9 years in the making, really. I guess only 4 years since I've been seriously thinking about it.
Wow, this was a huge milestone for you.
Yeah, I almost think this is, you know, maybe like the greatest running thing I will have done, possibly. I don't want to get too kind of assume I'm never going to do anything good again, but like it feels at the moment like, yeah, the big one. So it's quite nice to just, yeah, sit back and sup on some wine and think, okay, that went all right. But you never know, there might be someone else waiting around the corner, you know, getting some revenge for John. Poor John only had the record for 8 days, which seems incredibly cruel. There might be someone, you know, well, I know at least one person is going to go for it this year. One more person. And I've got a friend who's a very, very good runner who could easily, well, I don't know about easily, but could beat that time, when he has the time to. But, yeah, I'm just sitting back and enjoying it, I suppose, for now.
Excellent. Well, Mike Hartley enjoyed it for 31 years.
Yeah. And what was great is Mike came out, I don't know if John said, he came out for both our attempts. He lives, you know, relatively nearby. But, yeah, he came along and he was there in Edale at the finish for me. And John was as well. John turned up, which was amazing. So there was that wonderful community thing again, where almost the person is there to almost visibly hand over the baton kind of thing. It's quite cool like that. It's nice. Yeah.
That is nice. That's I've never quite experienced that, and I miss it. That's a very nice story. Both John and Mike was there when you finished. That's a celebratory time that would be.
It was really special, actually, and because of the sort of COVID-19 and stuff. And even on my tracker page, I did put a request, as have several other, including John, other runners, sort of said, "Look, it's lovely that you're interested in this, but ideally, don't please turn out and see me because of the virus." But actually, when I got into Edale, which is a tiny village, there's like, yeah, two pubs and one shop. I was thinking, well, you know, I didn't give it a lot of thought, but I was thinking, oh, maybe there'll be, you know, five or six people. And there were maybe, you know, at least 40 people, if not 50 people, had gathered. And yeah, old friends and, you know, fell running sort of dignitaries, including kind of Mike and John. And it was amazing. Honestly, it was probably one of the best moments of my life, if I'm honest. It was amazing. It was really wonderful.
Wow, that's great. And possibly because you're sponsored by Innovate, they had film people there. So I'm going to put on the show notes some links so people can look up some video and some still photography from the Pennine Way. You have some good content there.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, it was intriguing that because so I've got good friends, Matt and Ellie Green from they're an independent adventure filmmaking company called Summit Fever Media. Now they're making a separate film kind of about me and John and our attempts on the Pennine Way and the history of the Pennine running the Pennine Way. So they're putting that together now. It'll be out later in the year. But also they were employed to do, on my thing, daily updates, which wouldn't, if I'm honest, wouldn't be exactly how I would have designed things. You know, you don't necessarily, I guess there's a whole, you're really laying yourself open there to be, I suppose, exposed. If things go badly, they've still got to make a video about how badly things are going, you know. So in a way, you could see that as, and also, I mean, Innovate had a new shoe coming out, the Terra Ultra G270, which I was wearing. But they'd already also done a separate video sort of campaign for that with me in it. So I had quite a lot of, you could call it pressure around it. But I actually think it, and I wouldn't have chosen to have all those elements. But actually, I think that really helped me focus, you know, leading up to it, really focus on it, do everything properly. For example, I got up there a day early with my team and we just had a day relaxing beforehand, just because so often in these things, you know, you have a bad journey up there and then there's some last minute panic. And I just thought, no, it's got to be relaxing. It made me get a decent van. So there was enough space in the van for them to sort of relax a bit and organize things and just made me do. I even spoke to a sports psychologist beforehand. Not that I necessarily felt I had some sort of major weakness there, but just to think what are the extra tactics that I could learn to help me do well at this. So I think those extra pressures actually helped kind of focus me and did actually help me in the end. And also, I guess you've got to flip it over and think, actually, all these people they've got faith in me. They think I can do it. You know, if you concentrate it too much on the other way, then I think, yeah, you can mess your own head up a bit. But as I say, I suppose I wouldn't have chosen still to have had those pressures. But thankfully, it worked out. Otherwise, those videos, I wouldn't be keen to see on those videos if they, yeah.
What a good story. Yeah. That's a good story, Damien. So you felt some pressure because you were being watched. And so instead of buckling under the pressure, so to speak, you took it to heart and you really buttoned up your attempt. You went up there a day in advance, and you also mentioned a few minutes ago you didn't drink alcohol for 4 months. For Britain, that's a little different, is it not?
I have to keep that quiet, or they'll ask me to, you know, leave the country. I also timed it. I'm not a big drinker anyway. It's not, I don't find it that hard to not drink for a while, but I did time it so that even if I only just broke John's record, it would just still be in time for the pubs. I think pubs tend to shut at 11 o'clock at night, and I was going to get in there if I beat John even by a minute, it was going to be about quarter to 11. So I'd just have time for a pint if I only just scraped in. And that was kind of a motivating factor as well. Cause I think, yeah, you need as many motivating factors as you can find, really.
On that note, Damon, that's outstanding advice. On that note, we'll leave listeners with that. Just have time for a pint. Need motivating factors. This is good advice. I see why you're a running coach. So people, go to the show notes. We're going to have Damien Hall's website. He has a personal website here. Links to his coaching and journalism, and of course, some videos on the Pennine Way. So that'll be on the written show notes. And Damien, thanks very much for talking with us. And please relax. Enjoy your family.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I've listened to lots of your shows and I follow the American scene, really, really avidly. But the global scene as well. And I've only had one trip over to America a couple of years ago, for one race, but I'd love to, yeah, I look forward to coming back sometime, whether it's a race or an FKT attempt or something, but I'd love to experience your trail running culture some more, because yeah, so many great characters and community over there as well. But thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.